Are you echoing your head coach's message when he's not around?
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we're joined by Coach Matt McCall, the former head coach at UMass in Chattanooga and the current game analyst with NBC. Coach McCall began his coaching career as a student manager and later graduate assistant under Coach Billy Donovan at the University of Florida. He went on to serve as an assistant at Florida Atlantic and then returned to Florida as an assistant coach during two Final Four run seasons. In 2015, McCall was named the head coach at Chattanooga, where he led the Mocs to a 29-6 record and an NCAA tournament appearance in his first season. He later took over the UMass program, guiding them through five seasons of transition and growth. Now a respected voice in the media, McCall brings coaching insight to his analyst role with NBC. In this episode, we speak on the mindset of his early years in his coaching career, his experiences in his 7 years as a head coach, and what he has taken away now from the analyst side of the game. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach Matt McCall. Dr. Dish Basketball, the number one selling shooting machine in the world, provides the most innovative game-like training with on-demand workouts, multiplayer stat tracking, and instant analytics that allow coaches and players to be better every day. All you have to do is mention Rising Coaches for an exclusive discount on a Dr. Dish shooting machine for your team. What's up, coaches? Welcome back, everybody. Alan Major, Doug Caputo here with another episode, the Rising Coaches podcast. We're graced to learn from a longtime head coach and someone that we get to definitely learn more from. Before we get to the introduction, we have to do a quick shout out to our Rising Coaches Conference collabing U.S. Nike basketball camps and Snow Valley camps out in Westmont College, Santa Barbara, California, July 22nd. You can sign up on our website, on our social media, whatever it may be. Just an opportunity to be able to meet like-minded coaches and dive more into the game. But the reason, as we always say, the reason that you are listening to this episode and wanting to hear not our voices, because it's definitely not us, we have the former head coach, the University of Massachusetts in Chattanooga, and the current game analyst for NBC, ladies and gentlemen, Coach Matt McCall. Coach McCall, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, I appreciate you guys having me on, man. Anytime we get to jump on and talk some hoop and talk journey, talk being an assistant, talk being a head coach, man. I've been through it. I've seen it. I've done it. I've seen the highs. I've seen the lows. So I could probably write a book, but right now we're going to squeeze this in about a 40-minute episode here.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Appreciate you doing this.
Yeah. Big
time. We'll keep our eyes out for a book in the coming years then, because then we'll.
That's right.
Let me say this too. I've always had great respect for you, man. Even when I was a graduate assistant or director of ops and you were sitting over there in that national championship game on the opposite bench, Ohio State, always had tremendous respect for you and your journey as well.
I appreciate that, man. Now, at some point I'll watch that game. I haven't yet. I just remember, I think, 84-75, if I'm not mistaken. But at some point, I'll watch that
game. And Al Horford shimmy shaking after a dunk. Okay?
Yo, man. No. Corey
Brewer. Who's still doing it?
It was Corey Brewer that we wanted to cut loose and make beat us. And to his credit, he did.
Yeah.
Because we said, no Humphrey. Let's keep the other guys at bay. There's one guy that we're going to live with. And to his credit. I think he's 29% on the season or something like that and goes like either 3 for 6 or 4 for 7. I can't remember. But anyway.
40-year-old Al Horford still doing it
for the
Celtics. It's incredible.
Amazing what happens when you take care of your body.
It's unreal, amazing. Man. Yeah. Unreal. Yeah. No, that's
no doubt.
Special bunch you guys had. But yeah. Yeah.
Well, thanks, Coach,
thanks for pulling that scab off early in the morning.
There's something to tell you is me and him have now traveled to, what has it been, 2 Final Fours together. And every time we go to an event, like me and him, typically we get a hotel room, whatever, we're always chopping it up. And there's always a way that he brings it up and then he tries to veer away from it. No, I don't want to talk about this. So to be able to get a little bit out of him right here is great.
Yeah, it's therapeutic, by the way, because thank goodness to get that far. My God.
Coach, talking on that, and then ultimately just going back to the beginning of your journey, right? So exactly where we're saying, you started with Florida and then ultimately moved up Florida Atlantic. But in those first couple steps, those first couple positions, like as a young coach in the profession, just talk about like your mindset starting as a coach. And then what were you focused on throughout the process? Were you like looking at trying to get that next step? Were you just focused on learning? What was your mindset?
I think first it was, how do I get my foot in the door? Went to the University of Florida thinking I was just going to be a normal student, pledge a fraternity, and do what 95% of my hometown, Ocala, Florida, did when they went off to college. I had two sisters that went to the University of Florida, and this is what I'm going to do. And I was away from the game for 1 year. I had originally planned on going over to Stetson University and was going to be a preferred walk-on. And then I transferred to Florida, and I was just like, you know what? This is where I'm supposed to be. My dad played football at the University of Florida. I was born a Gator. And I had that year where I wasn't with the game. And I'll never forget this because of my dad and his relationships there. I got in, I had a meeting with Jeremy Foley. I sat outside of his office for an hour, and his secretary kept looking at me like I was crazy. But I just needed an in. I needed an in over there in the basketball facility. And my in came through Jeremy Foley. He set up a meeting with Donnie Jones, who, if you don't know Donnie Jones is one of the greatest human beings in all of college basketball. Never has a bad day. He's at a very challenging place in Stetson. Took him to their first ever NCAA tournament last year. Right after they did that, loses his whole player, all his whole team. Everybody goes in the portal. And you would never know it with how his attitude is. And that was my first. It was being a student manager, it opened up a lot of doors. And that was my in. And my in came through Donnie Jones. And Jeremy Foley. So I have to give those guys a tremendous amount of credit. And it was like, once I got in, I'm like, okay, you know, how do I work my way up here? But more importantly, just whatever, give it all to me. Give it to me. Like, you want me to do the laundry? Cool, I'll do the laundry. You want me to sweep the floor? Cool, I'll sweep the floor. You want me to pass out the water bottles? Like, I did not care. You swallow your pride and you go in there and serve the program. And that's what I tried to do. The whole college lifestyle, did I have fun in college? Yes, of course, everybody does. This came first. And I wanted to be in that office. If not, but it was hard to beat Coach Donovan to the office, man. That guy got there at 7 a.m., but I was going to be there right around then. And I had my academic schedule, but I poured my heart and soul into whatever role I was given. The following year, after doing that for 1 year, I was the quote-unquote head manager. And then I did that. And then it was Coach Donovan wanted me to stay, get my master's, graduate assistant coach. And once we won the championship in 2006, I had graduated. I had a master's degree. But I had always poured myself into it. It was like, look, whatever job they give you, tackle it, do it, and do it with a great attitude and do it with great effort. It didn't matter. And that's what I tried to do. And in 2006, I had developed a great relationship with Anthony Grant, who's another one of the greats in college basketball. Ironically, my last game as a head coach was against Anthony Grant. And I have a picture saved on my phone. I had already been let go. And we can get into this here in a little bit. I had already been let go, and I decided to finish the season. But there's a picture of Anthony in the handshake line holding me and giving me a hug and holding my head. And like, because that's who he is. Yeah. So in 2006, he takes the VCU job and calls me. I was at an engagement party for a friend. I remember some golf course, and I didn't even hang out at the party because I was on my phone the whole time. I'm walking around this golf course talking to Coach Grant, and I'm so excited. This is my guy. I've seen people that I was a GA with or a manager with that struggled to get jobs in college basketball, and I'm getting ready to go with Anthony Grant to VCU, one of the best mid-major programs in the country. I could not have been more excited. Hang up the phone 5 minutes later, as I'm walking around this golf course trying to get my way back to this house where the engagement party was. Coach Donovan calls, and I'm thinking, he's calling to say congratulations. That's why he's calling. Coach, couldn't thank you enough, man. You were so good to me throughout my career. I'm so happy. I'm excited. I'm going to Richmond with Coach Grant. I can't wait. I'm offering you the same job here. I need you to stay. I don't want you to go to VCU. I want you to be the director of basketball operations at the University of Florida. And I'll never forget calling Coach Grant back and telling him that I'm not coming, because it was the hardest thing at that point that I had to do, was tell him no. But that's ultimately how I ended up in that role. And it was, again, serve the program. Give it to me. Give it to me. You want me to do the team travel? Great. You want me to do the gear? Great. You want me to book the meals, what the pass out the per diem, whatever it may be? It didn't matter. After the championship in 07, now there's all these things coming at Coach Donovan, and I ended up being his guy. Like, wherever he went, I went. It was like I was his guy. I was the first seat on the bench. I was his guy. And after doing that for a year, I walked into his office, and I said to him, I'm so appreciative, but I want to be a coach. I want to be a coach. And he's like, here's what you got to do. You got to go get a coaching job. And if you go get experience on the road recruiting, on the floor teaching, scouting, everything, I will hire you back. He picks up the phone. Him and Larry Shiat hounded Mike Jarvis until Mike Jarvis answered the phone. He had just gotten the job at FAU. And I went down there in my Chevy Trailblazer, met with Coach Jarvis, so indebted to him as well for giving me that first opportunity. And we went down there, man, and our first year, we lost 19 games in a row. We were 6-26. And you think about this, man. The streamers were coming down back-to-back national championship, and I'm sitting on a bench in the middle of a 19-game losing streak. And it was one of those things. It's like you got to continue to approach this the same way you did the other stuff. Pour yourself into this work. Serve the program. 3 years later, we end up winning the Sun Belt regular season title. And Coach Donovan was a man of his word. He lost three assistants. Rob Lanier went back to Texas. Larry Shiat takes the head job at Wyoming. Richard Pitino goes back with his dad at Louisville. And he picked up the phone and hired me. And it was, I remember driving up the interstate, going back to the uniform. I had to stop and tell my then girlfriend, who's now my wife, I stopped at her job and said, hey, I'm going back to Florida. I'll never forget. She said, you want me to come with you? And I'm like, yeah, sure. It's like, all right, we're going to get married. I'm just going to tell you that. But just that drive back up the interstate to the University of Florida, you know, at that point in time in my life, I didn't care what they were paying me. I didn't care. And I had just been at FAU surviving in Boca Raton on not a very big coach's salary. And I was so excited to be back. But it was the same mindset. Serve the program and serve the head coach.
Yeah, no, that sums it up, man, just because we're in such a microwave society now and everybody wants everything yesterday. And I get it. Again, even us, we're all about advancement, but also advancement with perspective and advancement with treating the spot that you're at like it's the only job in the world. And that's basically what you've done in a nutshell. So usually when you do that, it's just funny how the next thing tends to find you. Good stuff, man. Great for sharing that.
And especially being able to, I want to say it's a small world because we've actually had the opportunity, Coach Shiat, Coach Jarvis, we've had the opportunity to talk with both of them and just be able to hear like their perspective and stuff.
It's a smaller world. And it's
incredible.
It is thinking what coaches are dealing with. This is pre-NIL, transfer portal, all that stuff. You're still dealing with a lot, right? The season ends, the recruiting calendar, which has completely changed. You're on the road. Like, you're never home. If you are home, you're just home to do laundry, right, in July. Like, they just pop in for a couple days. Camps going on. I don't even know if people do camps anymore. Like, camps are such a big deal. University of Florida, we're getting 400, 500 kids to come to our camp. And there was so much going on at that point in time that Larry Shiat would stop every single day and make it a point to help a young person on that staff. He was calling Mike Jarvis every single day until Mike Jarvis picked up the phone, like every single day. That's who Coach Shy is, to help somebody on staff. So if you're a young assistant coach, are you trying to help your ops guy with his advancement? Are you trying to help your student managers? Are you trying to help your graduate assistant coaches? Nobody taught me how to do that better than Larry Shy. And still to this day, if you have a relationship with Larry Shiat, even if you don't, and you pick up the phone and call him and ask for help, you know what he's going to do? Help. That's who he is.
No, 100%. Matter of fact, after the pod we had with him, Doug and I didn't have a chance to go. I may try to go this year. But he said, hey, if you guys want to go down to the clinic, let me know. And this is who you get a hold of and all that. Boom.
Don't let him tell you it's not called the Larry Shiat Clinic either. It's called the Larry Shiat Clinic.
That's set in stone for sure.
Yeah, I caught him one time. I shot a text to him. Every now and then we have people on. I'll stay in touch just to stay in touch. I shot him one. He was doing yard work. He picked up the phone and he goes, yeah, I'm doing yard work right now. I was like, okay. He's like, yeah, what's going on? Just had a conversation.
Unbelievable.
But just like the things that you've taken away so far to leading into you being a head coach. So I know I mentioned Florida Atlantic, but then you ultimately step into another assistant. Let me rephrase it. Then you step into your head coaching position at Chattanooga and UMass. But with those two positions, being a head coach for what? It was about 7 years. For being that head coach, everything that you have learned at those great programs, Florida Atlantic, what were some things going into that first year as a head coach that you thought, these are my non-negotiables? And then what did you look for on a day-to-day basis to enforce with the team?
Yeah, I think a couple things. One, and this would be a message to assistant coaches, especially young assistant coaches that are out there, it's okay to want to be a head coach, but it can't consume you and take you away from the job that you have as an assistant coach. Like, your self-promoting cannot ever become before the program and serving your head coach in the job that you have. It can't. That's a non-negotiable. Looking back, I really wish I used to sit in the back of the film room in any film session that we ever had before the season, after the season, before a win, after a win, before a loss, after a loss, dealing with something, dealing with a player, dealing with culture, whatever it may be. And I'd just sit in the back and write. Anytime Coach Donovan spoke, I would write it down. So when I became a head coach, I had these like books and books of notes, right? It's all right, first team meeting. Let me go back to our first team meeting, right? Oh, here we go. All right, this is my message. I'm going to do this either. And I'm going to take everything we did at the University of Florida and I'm going to inject it into Chattanooga. Guess what? It worked. Why? Because we had 100% retention. And those players, when Coach Will Wade decided to leave to go to VCU, said it didn't matter who I was. It really didn't. As long as I could run a practice and draw up a ball play and a timeout, we were going to win. We added a couple of the right pieces in recruiting, and we had a core group of guys led by Eric Robertson, our team leader, God rest his soul, passed away on us a couple of years ago. I was his third head coach. Casey Jones, I was their third head coach. And those two guys were our seniors. And then you throw in a Trey McClain, you throw in a Justin Toyo, a Greg Pryor, a Chuck Esther. Like, those guys were so locked in that everything we did at Florida, it worked, right? So all my little notes, everything that I had worked. I wish I would have spent more time when I was at Florida, when I had seconds to catch my breath of when I do get an opportunity, what do I want this to look like? What are the values that are important to me? Not the values that are important to Billy Donovan, not the values that are working at the University of Florida. That culture fit the University of Florida. That culture, that doesn't mean it's going to fit at Chattanooga, and that really doesn't mean it's going to fit at UMass. Because the job that I took over at UMass, it was like a revolving door of guys in the portal. It was just like, can I have my release? Can I have my release? Can I? And I'm like, oh my gosh, we're not even going to have a team. Holy cow, how are we going to do this? But me trying to do everything that we did, looking back on it, everything that we did at the University of Florida, because it worked at Chattanooga, doesn't mean it's going to work at UMass because it's completely different. And all taking that, and doing, looking at my notes, going back through them, everything Coach Donovan said, trying to give that message at UMass didn't come off real and it didn't come off authentic. And the second that you stand in front of your team and you don't come off real and you don't come off authentic, you've lost your locker room. You've lost it. So it's okay to want to climb the ladder. It's okay to want to be a head coach, but it can't come before serving the program. But when you do have those moments, and maybe it's early in the office, think about, what do I want this to look like? Because just because it's working at Ohio State and I'm watching a future Hall of Famer in Thad Matta or a Hall of Famer this year coming up in Coach Donovan, doesn't mean it's going to work at other places because the people are different. And I think that is the message that I look back at my 7 years as a head coach. That's where I messed up. That's where I messed up.
No, that's great advice, man. That's so good. You're right. Like, every guy's got to. I had this conversation just a few years ago with a women's assistant coach, and she's advanced now and she's coaching in the SEC. But at the time, she was a young GA and was just trying to figure out, how do I get better? And I'm like, obviously, you know, your head coaches, anytime you spend helping your head coach or helping the players is time well spent. If it's not directed to those two things, majority of the time, then reconsider what you're doing. But we had this very conversation. I said with her, I said, if you eventually see yourself at some point down the line as wanting to be a head coach, you've got to take every aspect of the program and create snapshots for yourself. And academics, what's the best looking snapshot of academics? How would I want that to look? Me, myself. Obviously, basketball. Then you have, whether it's travel, it's community service, it's player relationships, player development, all these things. And you've got to have a little, what's that best snapshot look like for all those things? And then when you can define that and crystallize that, not that you're still not going to pull from other people along the way, but that's huge advice, man, because it's very easy to, they talk about the NBA being a copycat league, but it's very easy as assistants to copycat things as well.
You know what, Coach, too, I think the culture piece, like I had a front row seat for really good assistant coaches. Anthony Grant was an unbelievable assistant coach. Larry Shyatt, Rob Lanier, like his ability to communicate in front of the team in terms of a scouting standpoint in Coach Lanier, like his work ethic in recruiting in Coach Lanier, right? Like I'm sitting there watching these guys, Donnie Jones, Tom Osham, like I had a John Pelfrey, like I had a Norm Roberts. I got to be with Norm Roberts for like 10 months before he went to Kansas with Coach Self. Like I got to be around some great ones. So from a scouting standpoint, from delivering messages to the team, to drawing up plays in a timeout, to running a practice, that stuff wasn't a problem. Culturally, what's going on? What is spending more time learning about those things, talking to leadership consultants, talking to reading more books, whatever it may be, that's the hard part. Like that, it's not the X's and O's, because you're spending about this much time on your X's and your O's. Like I used to love timeouts and actions and all that, but that's the easy part when it comes to this. I still got my magnetic board under here. My players would get so mad at me because I was putting in new plays every single day. Like that's spending time on what you want your program to look like culturally. And here's the biggest thing, and you know this, Coach. Who are you hiring? Because if I was going to go back to being an assistant coach, and I almost did last year, but it's just the timing for us, for me, for my family right now, it made more sense for us to stay where we are and stick with television, which I'm really enjoying. But your number one job, are you echoing your head coach's message when he's not around? Nobody was better than that than Mark Daigneault. And I want to get into Mark Daigneault because what a story that is too. And this is another great story. We were working together at the University of Florida. He was a GA. Echoing that message, you have to see it from Coach Donovan's perspective. It's not, if I was coaching, man, this is how I would do it. But this is what he wants. Like, that goes back to who you're hiring, who's around you. If they're not echoing your message, you have no chance. You may win a game here or there, but you have to echo your head coach's message every single – if there's a loss and he goes in there in a film session – and the film session's not pretty. Can you pull a player aside and get it to see from the head coaches, get him to see or her to see from his perspective? This is why he's saying this. You have to see it from him. He's not trying to lose. If I was the head coach, I see what you're saying. Is his message or her message getting echoed through that locker room? That is your most important job. Serve the program and echo your head coach's message.
Yeah, the beauty of what you just said, and by the time this drops, there's a real good chance he could be an NBA champion as a head coach by the time this pod drops. The irony, as we record this, is game one of the NBA Finals tonight. And so
I'll tell you this. I was at Florida Atlantic, and Florida was playing in Tampa in the NCAA tournament. And so I traded the Chevy Trailblazer. It was like breaking down at this point. So I'm in a Toyota Camry now, right? We got to get Toyota Camry. I take off across the state of Florida to go to Tampa and spend some time with those guys, spend some time up in the hotel film room with the coaching staff. And Coach Donovan keeps asking this guy questions. And I'm like sitting there, I don't even know who this is. I know Rob Lanier. I know Larry Scheid. I know Richard Pitino. I know Darren Hurts. I know everybody else on staff. Who is this guy? coach in the film room is asking him questions. It was Mark Daigneault. So fast forward 2 months, I'm headed up the interstate to go back to the University of Florida. And Mark had set up his office. There was no office for him. There was no space. But Mark had set up his office in the conference room and was literally working out of shoeboxes in the conference room. Another guy that drove a Toyota Camry. Okay, Mark Daigneault, Toyota Camry. I come to find out his role, he's in grad school. He's a graduate assistant. He was at Holy Cross. His head coach got fired, was a manager at UConn. Fresh out of being a manager at UConn, gets an assistant coaching job at Holy Cross. They get let go. Ryan Ford, one of Coach Donovan's best friends, connects the dots, and they give Mark Daigneault a graduate assistant job at Florida. And I remember my first couple weeks on the job, Coach Donovan kept going in to the conference room and talking to this guy and asking him questions. And so many assistant coaches would be threatened by that. You think about it, Coach. Like, I'm the assistant. Like, next to me is Norm Roberts, former head coach at St. John's. Next to him is John Pelfrey, former head coach at Arkansas. And he's going to talk to the GA every day, asking questions. What do you think of this action? What do you think of this? What do you think of that? Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, man, if he's listening to him, I need to go learn from him. Not he's the GA and I'm above him. Like, how dare Coach Donovan not come talk to me? He's the,
right.
But again, being able to adapt to who your head coach is, not be threatened because he's talking to the ops guy more than maybe he's talking to you. It doesn't matter. He could talk to the janitor. He could talk to the person that cleans the building. If that's who the head coach wants to talk to, you can't have your feelings hurt. It can't hurt your feelings, because the second that your team sees that there is dysfunction or disconnect on the staff, you have no chance. So it doesn't matter. So Coach Donovan would go in there every single day and spend time with Mark Daigneault, talking actions, talking pick and roll coverage. So, man, I'm going to go learn from this guy. Man, this guy's, and he ended up being one of the smartest coaches that I was ever around. But he would stay there after practice and sit there and talk to Scotty Wilbekin about why Irving Walker was playing more minutes than him, or Casey Prather, why Brad Beal was playing over, whatever it may be, and just get the players to see it from Coach Donovan's perspective. There was nobody better. Nobody better. So I haven't seen, and here's another story for you, Coach. So this is why we won at Florida. Mark got married. I tell this story all the time. Mark got married a few years back, right before COVID. It had been like 2019. Met his wife in grad school. She's a gymnastics coach at Oklahoma. It's like, that. Talk about a championship family. The gymnastics team in Oklahoma wins it like every year. So she's winning championships. Mark's winning championships. Unbelievable. But anyways, they get married. Coach Donovan was there. Jeremy Foley, our athletic director, was there. Oliver Winterbone, at the time, was our video coordinator. He was there. Our strength coach, Preston Green, was there. Our trainer, Duke Warner, was there. Our administrative assistant, Tracy. Everybody was there. Because there was no jealousy. There was no envy of Mark. Like, that's how Mark made everybody feel. That's how we all felt about Mark. We never felt like we were above him. We never felt like we were below him. We were all connected and on the same page. That's why we wanted a high level, because the players saw it. And when he gets married and everybody shows up to his wedding, didn't matter what you had going on, as busy as your life was, you went. That's why you win. And to see where he is right now, I am not at all surprised. And even watching his press conferences, it's not about him. He doesn't make it about him. No. He makes it about the Thunder organization. That's who Mark Daigneault is.
Yeah. No, unbelievable.
The one thing, and I say this loosely because this isn't obviously, this shouldn't be your motive, but the one thing is, if you're helping the people around you grow too, they'll ultimately get to a position. It's exactly where you're saying now. He's the head coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder, and say maybe, hey, somebody needed a position to help get a job. Like, you can easily go to him. You've helped him progress. And again, obviously that's not the motive, is to try and help this person to get to a spot where he can help you later. But that's just how it works, is if you help one person, ultimately that can come right back to you. And to your point, he was one of the lowest people on the totem pole at the time. So you never know where they're going to end up, and especially like the role they're going to be in this situation.
Never put the suit on during the games. Always wore a polo sitting on the end of the bench. In timeouts, Coach Donovan, hey, Mark, what do you like here? What do you like here? What do you think here? And he's sitting there with a pencil behind his ear and a polo while we're all trying to figure out what tie we got to wear with our jacket. All right, best thing that ever came out of COVID is not having to put that suit back on. My only gripe with television, it's, can't we like put the NBC polo on?
Right.
Channel, you got NBC golf, we get like NBC basketball, but just an ultimate server of the program. When I got Chattanooga, I'll never forget that first summer of being a head coach. And this is, if you're a young head coach, you get your opportunity. You can't be afraid to take time to go learn. Like nothing, everything else can wait. Like it can all wait. If you have an opportunity to go to a Larry Shyatt clinic and learn, to go spend time with an NBA franchise and learn, the other stuff can wait. And I think for my first summer as a head coach, I went to OKC. And look, every NBA franchise is different. Some GMs, they don't really like you coming in there and sitting down and taking a lot of notes and seeing what's going on within those walls. And Mark at that point in time was the G League head coach. So while there's some of that going on a little bit in that building, we would go over to the Oklahoma City Blue practice facility and just sit there and talk. And he would share notes. And this is what he thinks culturally. And this is his philosophy. And this is how he's pouring this into the Oklahoma City Blue organization. Still at that point in time in his Toyota Camry. I got to think after being NBA coach of the year, Land Rover, we got something. But Mark's not a flashy guy.
Yeah.
So hopefully he's upgraded the Toyota Camry. But
yeah, the players will see to that. The players will make sure, yo, man, you can't do this now.
Yeah, you can't do this. But it's just he was the ultimate team guy and served the program, served the University of Florida, and never once ever made it about himself.
Wow. You know, it's amazing. This is just, I found it funny because I was talking to somebody about this yesterday, literally yesterday. The two best teams in the NBA currently, as we speak, as we record this pod, operate completely like college, quote unquote, atmospheres. Totally aligned, play with, defend, they share the ball. Obviously, each team's got a star, but in terms of style of play, open man is the right shot. And so you have these two teams that are right now sitting at the top of the NBA operating like college teams, whereas 95% of college teams are operating like pro teams. It's just kind of funny how all this is flipped all of a sudden, because both teams played the long game, draft and develop their roster. You had Siakam and you had Halliburton. They were free agents. And then obviously Jay came, was a free agent, got traded from the Clippers. But pretty much draft and develop for the most part. Two organizations, and they built it, and their small market situations as perception small market. They're not playing like small market, but just very the irony in what's going on right now is really amazing.
Yeah, the ball movement. I look at you look at college football, and quote unquote, the highest paid roster was Ohio State. I think football is completely different from basketball. But our national championship this year. When you watch that Florida team play, as good as Walter Clayton was, they don't get to where they got to without Thomas Hawk, without him accepting his role, without Aberdeen being acceptive of his role, without Elijah Martin and Will Richard and these guys with the ball moving, not sticking, not over dribbling, not making it about themselves. Elijah Martin took less money to go to the University of Florida. So there's still some of that in our game where it's, look, this, you can still win. I don't care. There was rumors about other teams with much higher paid rosters that one didn't make the NCAA tournament or two got knocked out in the first round. So doing things the right way, playing the game the right way, to your point, you can still win at a high level. And I think that's what that Florida team did this year.
For sure. And that's exactly why I said 95%, because there's still that small core up there that is still, you can still do it. I won't say the college way, but I think we all know what we mean by that. But yeah, let it rip, Dougie.
There's still a right way to do it. And you, yeah, exactly. You can tell the people who are the successful ones coming out on top after all that. Coach, I want to ask this because it made me start thinking about it. Like, you being on the analyst side, I know you keep touching on this. And we've got to hear from Coach Fraschilla. We've got to hear from Coach Pastner, Coach Biancardi, just guys who have been in the game and then stepped out onto the analyst side. Have you seen the game from a different lens or different perspective now, being outside of the coaching mindset, now being on more of a – on the analyst side, you're seeing the game from a completely different side, a different perspective. Has that changed your viewpoint as a coach?
One, I keep asking my wife, did I look like these guys do? Like, just beat up, battered, February, dark circles around your eyes, Some guys overweight. Some guy, I would always get underweight because I wouldn't eat. I'd live on coffee and Diet Dr. Pepper and an occasional Coors Light. Like, I was like, do I look as tired as these guys did? She's like, you looked worse. And I was like, oh, okay.
That's yeah. Thank you very much. Thanks, very honey. Kind. Yeah, that's right.
I think the one thing that's really fun to me about being on this side of it and doing television and calling games is you get the opportunity to go to practice. And you get an opportunity to see how guys are doing it in different ways. So you get to go to shoot around. And some coaches don't really believe in it. So it's a glorified, it's a shoot around. They're literally just shooting. They're not doing anything else. Or you go see a Mark Schmidt shoot around that's 2 hours and running through every single play in his playbook. There's just different ways to do things. So I think that's been really fun, is seeing that piece of it, of like how guys orchestrate practices, run practices, and being able to do that and then jumping on air and talking about it. So I love that piece of it, because if you said, hey, Matt, what's the thing you miss most? I miss practice and I miss preparing. Those are the two. I miss the locker room. Like, I miss the camaraderie of being a part of a team. And I miss the routine of your daily wake up, get your coffee, get to the office, write some notes down, open your door, talk to the staff, plan practice, work out, go to practice, take a shower, like that daily routine. But really, it's being at practice. It's the preparation, and that locker room is what you ultimately end up, you know, missing most. So don't take advantage of it, because coach knows this. Once you're out, it's challenging to get back in, and your phone stops ringing.
Find out who your friends are. Yeah.
You find out who your friends are really quickly. And I was on top of the world in 2014 as a hot assistant coach, getting offers, getting opportunities, taking interviews, going to the Villa 7 as one of the best assistant coaches in the country, till your phone not ringing. And it is a humbling experience to go through. So take nothing for granted. If you have an opportunity right now, pour everything you can into that opportunity and take nothing for granted, because 7 years later, it can be taken from you like that.
Yeah, for sure. And never, you're right. And never lose the honor of coaching, the honor of it, right? Don't ever underestimate what an honor it is. Because we talked about this last week on a different pod, as players really now more than ever come and go. However long you have them, there's an incredible responsibility, whether that's 9 months or 2 years, or God willing, if you do have them for four, hallelujah. But it's a huge thing while you have them. And then you're eventually going to pass them on to somebody else, either another coaching staff or the real world. And what have you done during that time to steward those guys while you have them, to have them be better than they were? Can you leave them better than you found them by the time you pass them on? And then two, don't ever let your players lose the joy of hooping.
Yeah. I brought up Donnie Jones earlier. He goes to the NCAA tournament for the first time in school history, loses his whole team. But Donnie will tell you he felt good for all of his players. Maybe in the moment it's difficult and you're scrambling and trying to get guys, but he helped every single one of those guys maybe put more money in their pocket, get to a better level, get to a higher level. And that's what it's about. We can sit here and complain. We can complain about NIL. We can complain about revenue sharing. We can complain about the transfer portal. If you want to complain, then go do something else. Like, it's just, that's the way. Complain about dealing with agents. It's not going anywhere. It is not going anywhere. In fact, it's probably only going to get worse. Don't take for granted the opportunity you have to coach the game of basketball. You get to coach a game every single day because you have to deal with some nonsense, but the nonsense is not going anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
That's one of the biggest takeaways a lot of people have said on here too, is you got to adapt. Because if you don't adapt to the modern day game or society, then you are going to be the one who's going to be adapting on the couch. Like, you got to be able to adapt to everything going on.
And it's a golden opportunity to teach these guys professionalism, right? And professionalism shows itself in many forms, not just dealing with money and finances and things of that nature, but now they have to go make appearances. They have to go be places and speak. They have NIL obligations. Yeah. All right. Go get fitted for a couple of suits, man. It's a different, are you organized? Like, hey, all right, you don't use your phone anymore. Go get yourself a day planner or put something on your iPad where you lay your stuff out. Master the art of a handshake and eye contact, right? Like just all these little things that we have golden opportunities now that because they're going to be professionals for somebody at some point when the ball stops bouncing. So why not fast track them and use this stuff to fast track them along the way?
Said 100%.
So coach, we typically like to tie it all up with one thing and one question. Really what that is, just if we're putting you back into that first spot, I know you have given everybody a lot of advice so far. But if there was just like a piece of advice that maybe you would give your younger self starting in this profession, kind of thinking back on everything that you have known and what you have done so far, just what would that advice be to give young Coach McCall?
Yeah, I think spend more time, less X's and O's. I had a front row seat for, in my opinion, and Coach Major scouted against him. He can probably tell you I had a front row seat for one of the best offensive minded coaches in college basketball. The X's and O's piece, I was prepared for that. There is no question about it. I wish I would have asked more questions back then to my head coach of culturally, like how did this University of Florida basketball culture come about? Knowing that it starts with people, but how did it come about? When you get that opportunity, I know we live in what have you done for me now? And coaches are not getting the time that maybe they did in years past. It's 3 years, you don't win, we're on to the next guy. Let's just buy you out, we'll pay the big buyout, and we're going to move on. But I look at my tenure at UMass, and it was very rushed. People don't remember, I was the second guy that got hired. You know, Coach Kelsey took the job, and obviously it was the right decision for him to go back to Winthrop, and then obviously ultimately had an unbelievable run there in the College of Charleston, what he did there, and now at Louisville, what he's doing. That was the right decision. So when I've got hired, everybody was in a rush. We were behind. Who's staying? Who's leaving? And you just rush. You rush to hire a staff. I was getting pressure to hire somebody from the Northeast. I was getting pressure to hire a former head coach. I was trying to bring some guys with me from Chattanooga. And it was just, it wasn't the right mix. And then all of a sudden, you're having to make very difficult decisions that ultimately impact people's lives and people's families because you're trying to culturally get the program correct. But I look back, it was because I didn't take my time. It was because I felt rushed. Then in recruiting, you're just trying to get 13 guys on the roster, right? And it's, look at this kid's numbers. Like he put up this amount and shot this percentage, but are you bringing in the right guys culturally? So I would take a step back and one, ask a lot more questions of, how did this culture come about at the University of Florida? Like, how did it come about? Like, what were the steps to get this place to where it is culturally? And then take your time. I know you're not getting time, but you can't be in a rush when it comes to hiring the people that are around you every single day and piecing together your roster. Even if you're behind, you need to have a conversation with your athletic director year one and say, look, like, we're a little bit late here. We're behind the eight ball, but this is going to get some time. And we're going to get this right. I can't worry about what Dayton's doing or what VCU's doing or what Rhode Island's doing. I can't worry about that. We have to get this place right. And in order to do that, it's got to take some time. And then lastly, just that authenticity piece of be who you are. Don't try to be Billy Donovan. Don't try to be Thad Matta. Don't try to be Danny Hurley or Rick Pitino or Richard Pitino. Whoever you don't be who you are. Because if you start trying to be someone you're not, your players will see completely through it. And it was, man, I'm going to become a head coach, and I'm going to be just like Coach Donovan. Like I'm going to talk like him, act like him on the sidelines. Messages going back to my old notes of everything I was writing down when he was speaking. No, that was a good habit to have, and I learned a lot during that. But I can't try to be who he is. I have to be who I am. Because if I'm not who I am, it's not coming off real, authentic. The players are going to see right through it. I brought this up before on air. I think Kyle Neptune is a great human being and a really good basketball coach. But all you heard about Villanova when he got that opportunity was, it's just going to continue. The Villanova way, the Jay Wright way, the Villanova way. You're not setting him up for success if that's got to be the case. because maybe in times of just trying to do it the way that one of the greatest college basketball coaches of all time has done it, right? Me doing what we just did at the University of Florida, we're just going to do it here and think that it's going to work. It's not real. It's not authentic. And those players see right through that stuff. They see right through it, man.
Very sharp.
They are not – we don't give them as much credit as we should. They see through it, and now you're already behind the eight ball, and it's going to be – it's tough to come back from. But take your time, hire the right people, and learn. Learn what you want your program to be about, not just taking something from wherever you're working right now and thinking you're going to inject it into the school of the job you're taking. Yeah. Because that place is different. The people are different. The administrators are different. Like, the administration is different. How the HR department works is different. How your AD works, his staff, his second in charge, all that stuff's different.
Yeah.
And you have to understand that and go into it. And just the biggest thing is continue to serve. Be where your feet are. And don't complain. Complaining is the absolute worst. Don't complain. Serve your head coach. Serve the program. Serve the university. And please, do not complain.
Man. Oh, well said.
To be honest with you, you left me speechless there for a second, because I'm like, you literally just covered everything in all grounds that we could ask. You took everything to be where your feet are, to be the best that you could possibly. Like, you literally covered. Sometimes we'll get one of those answers. You got everything in one snippet. That's perfect. And for any coaches out there, I love saying this every time we're on these, because you didn't necessarily say anything about basketball. And I say that in the most complimentary way. Like, everything you just said was about being the individual that you are and being like serving the head coach that you have to ultimately get to where you want to be. It's not go out there and learn about all the X's and O's and try and find all the schemes yourself. It was solely about be the best servant and be the best person you could be. And then the rest of it will fall into place. Like, that literally is, it's the perfect sum up of everything.
You know, I think too,
it fits our message out here perfectly too, because you can get ghost screen flare actions and all that stuff. You can get that stuff anywhere.
We've spent another 2 hours talking about that.
You can't get that story about Mark Daigneault anywhere.
Yeah.
Only here, only that way.
And I just think too, if I was ever to go back on the sidelines, being able to, if it's an assistant coach, help that head coach, right? Like, you see so many staffs across the country that are clicky. Like, you have to avoid the clicks. Like, you have to, because that breeds negativity, that breeds complaining, and then that goes right into your team, because they're going to see it. If they see these two guys at practice every single day standing next to each other having a conversation in the same spot every single day, the players are going to be like, why aren't you on this side of the floor talking to this guy? Like, what are you like? You have to avoid that. Like, complaining. If an assistant coach could come in my office complaining about somebody else on staff, or why is the head coach listening to him? Like, you have no shot. It doesn't matter who the head coach is listening to. It does not matter. If he wants to talk to the secretary up front about pick and roll coverage, so be it. He's right. The head coach. Don't complain about it. He's the head coach.
Maybe she's a former Hooper and might have
She likes basketball screens. I don't know. Maybe she's good at trapping pick and rolls. I don't know. But if he wants to talk to her about it, who cares?
Absolutely, man. So true. Yeah. Matt, listen, before Dougie lands a plane, and hang out with us for a little bit afterwards, and we'll explain to you why. But number one, it's just great to see you again, but also just refreshed and happy. And talk about being where your feet are, where your feet are planted right there with your fam right now. That's literally where you're supposed to be. And it shows. It's your joy and your energy. We knew that was coming, popping through the screen. But I'm happy for you that you're in a great place for you. And then whatever comes down the road, God bless you. We know something good's going to happen. But that, to be somebody that's been out of it myself, and now to see you managing it the way you have and doing the TV stuff and having fun, it's awesome to see, man. So thank you for your friendship, but also thank you for doing this.
Yeah, Coach. Thank you guys for having me. I tell coaches all the time, and everybody gets caught up, and especially young coaches when they get an opportunity, it's, I want to help, because I was on the mountaintop. I got to the NCAA tournament at Chattanooga. I was Jim Nance and Tracy Wolfson and Raph and the crew was doing it. Grant Hill, they were in my hotel room the night before the game. So I'm on top of the world. And then you get knocked down. And you get from being at that top to your phone not even ringing is a very humbling experience. And I can help. If my perspective helps someone that gets a job and it helps them become successful, I'm all in. And that's, and I, platforms like this, I appreciate the opportunity to share my journey. And I hope it helps.
Oh, it will.
Oh, it will.
Absolutely.
It will.
100%.
You gave some great advice to everybody for sure. And people will definitely be able to take it away. And it's been authentic. Hey, the moral of it all, right? It's been authentic. Coach, as we said, like I know we always say on here, but just be able to give you, for you to be able to give us a minute. Thank you very much of taking of your time of the day. Obviously you got a lot going on, but we appreciate you be able to share your story and help back give to the next generation of coaches. And we'll see where the game goes in the future. But I think it's very bright and very promising for everybody else. So thank you for being on here. And everybody, again, another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. As always, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, we are excited for this. And thank you all for tuning in. Keep working, all you coaches out there. And keep rising, coaches. We'll see you all soon.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.